And there goes podcast audio, and Phoenix Kalita will be hosting, and Lola Phoenix, they're not the same person, will be coming on, and they are after a little bit of news and comment. Lola Phoenix and Phoenix Kalita will talk about growing up with abusive parents, which that could be something or other. All right, but before we get to the whole dat-gum deal, we open it up, get a little funk in, get a little trigger warning, and that also gives me time to share the link around.
William Jackson calls me the N-word in front of my mother.
That's right!
In Father Teresa's Wine Cellar, we believe all oppression is intersectional. And this means our analysis of current events frequently includes discussion of difficult and explicit content. Any combination of the following topics could be included in our show: murder, rape, war, climate change, racism, sexism, violence, sexual violence, homophobic violence, heterocentrism, discrimination and abuse against individuals of nonconformist sexuality, domestic violence, child abuse, child rape, child neglect, elderly abuse, verbal abuse, police brutality, microaggressions, ableism, cyberbullying, genital mutilation, ideological extremism, and people just being total fucking assholes.
You know, you still have to do the all right.
The all right?
Yeah, the all right. I can't do the all right like you do. You still have to start with the all right, man.
Start with the all right. We don't start with the all right.
We don't? Oh, it, don't you do it. Don't do it.
Don't do what?
Don't you do it. I know what you're...
the biggest, juiciest fruits I've ever seen.
That's what I start with. All right. WineCellarMedia.com, Phoenix Kalita, the Uppity Negress, Lola Phoenix. Caught Lola Phoenix writing on the, that platform, Medium.com. And when I came across that, I was like, let me see if this individual writes on the Facebooks as well. Searched him up. Fucker's already on my friends list. So that's how that goes. Alright, so, fucking stuff, things, whatnot, what have you, this, that, and the other. Right, scientists replacing actual honeybees with drone bees. Update on that, Russia bill. Now some folks may know a couple episodes back, like we showed, three different outlets that covered the Russia bill and talked about three completely different things. Like, one of them, the bill is about domestic violence, and the one on Right Wing Watch was just like, Russia is homophobic, fuck them. And then the other ones just talked about different ways of covering the story as if it wasn't even the same story. Incompetent white terrorist fails at terrorist plot. No terrorism charges for another white terrorist.
They were busy today.
All right. And if you missed yesterday's episode, white on white crime, cop killing cop, you know, a Florida man that was arrested for harassing police, because why not?
Because why not? Because when you're white and harass police, they only politely ask you to stop for a year before they arrest you.
And another feller accidentally texted his former employer while planning a murder. More what not, more what have you, this, that, and the other. Coming off a social dissonance, a critical analysis of justice. How are you folks doing? Over 8,000. And a lot of those posts you see, that's Penny Loco. Penny Loco doing a lot of those. You may have You may have heard of Penny Loco. She's part of cool. Boop-a-doop-boop-a-doop-a-doop-a-doop-doop-doop.
It's Free Thought Thursday in the wine cellar.
All right, you hear that voice? That's Penny Loco with all those audio drops. All right, I guess we should get you into the news, the comment, the stuff, and the things.
Maybe. It's all a possibility.
Right. All right, what do you want me to open for you?
How about we start with one of these terrorist stories?
Incompetent white terrorists.
Yeah, this one, I'm going to read it, but you're going to have to cut in when it's his name because you're going to like his name. Yeah, true story. All right. Incompetent white terrorist fails at terrorist plot. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. There's his name.
What the fuck? Jesus fucking Christ. Benjamin Thomas Samuel McDowell.
Yeah.
That name has too much money behind it to be doing terrorist plots. You're supposed to just pay hitmen when you have that kind of money behind you. Benjamin Thomas Samuel McDowell.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
I also want to point out that a lot of these Benjamin Thomas and Samuel are very Catholic-friendly names, as is McDowell, which is also Irish-friendly, so he was just trying to stay white.
He's a very white young man. All right, you jump into it.
So, Benjamin Thomas Samuel McDowell, connected to a white supremacy group, was arrested in Myrtle Beach Wednesday after purchasing a gun from an undercover FBI agent, apparently intending to commit an attack, quote, in the spirit of Dylan Roof. Mm-hmm. Because he was an anomaly. Benjamin McDowell, 29, from Conway, posted numerous messages on Facebook in December and January, including one that said, I would love to act what you think, and then followed it with a link to Temple Emmanuel El Conservative Synagogue in Myrtle Beach, according to court documents. Horry County Police let the FBI know McDowell had white supremacy and white supremacist extremist connections from his time in prison for various criminal offenses. He also had tattoos indicating an affiliation with these groups. One of the Facebook messages posted early January gave an anti-Semitic screed referencing Dylan Roof, and he included the statement, You want to post that if you ain't got the heart to fight for Yahweh like Dylan Roof did, shut the fuck up.
Okay.
Okay.
He's reasonable.
Very reasonable. McDowell first met the undercover FBI agent January 12th, believing that the agent, quote, handled problems for Aryan Nation.
Who the fuck is handling problems for Aryan Nation? Why are they handling problems for Aryan Nation?
McDowell discussed obtaining a gun, saying he didn't want it to be traced back to him, and he didn't want an attack coming back to him either. McDowell went on to say, I got the heart to do that shit, but I don't have the good training. All right, Brad with the good training. He continued, If I could do something on a fucking big scale and right on the fucking building or whatever, in the spirit of Dylan Roof. The next day, McDowell requested in a phone call with the agent a .40 caliber handgun to conduct an attack on an unknown location outside the county where he lived. After another racist Facebook post and more conversations with the agent, McDowell then planned to meet again in person to discuss a plan for the attack. Hey!
We fucking live among these people.
We do.
That's a normal guy.
Yeah.
That's a person in the grocery store. Yeah, it's like, hey, how you doing, buddy?
And I think that, I don't know if luck is the word, but, you know, we're sort of lucky that they even stopped him, and that's probably only because he was in prison with white supremacist gang tattoos. If he didn't have those tattoos of their prison record, they probably wouldn't have even been watching this guy. So, you know, and of course, you know, context, story behind the story, Trump just decided to remove white supremacist groups from terror watches. Remember? Right?
Yeah.
So, the funding to catch guys like this is disappearing.
Well, Bannon did.
Bannon did. President Bannon told 45 to do it, and 45 said, okay. Basically is what happened.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's good. Should we do this one while we're at it?
And remember, Lola Phoenix is on her way on. I'm waiting for her to message me.
Yes. All right, so in related news, no terrorism charges for white terrorist. Hey. In April 2015, police discovered Robert Dogart began recruiting people in hopes to, quote, burn down a mosque in Islamberg. That sounds like Alex Jones shit, right? Islamicist in Islamberg.
I like that fucking when Rashani first heard Alex Jones say that shit, because we hear it so much, like, we're just like, that's Jones talking.
Yeah.
And then Rashani had to stop. He was like, no, pause that. What the fuck is an Islamicist? It's like when that one where he called us climate changists.
It becomes professional, authentic, and factual if you put an ist at the end of it. Everybody knows that. Islamicists. Islamofascists. You know, Islamo-jihadists. Jihadists. Jihadists and Islamicists. All right.
No.
So Robert Dogart was recruiting people to, quote, burn down a mosque in Islamberg, which is a Muslim community in upstate New York. However, the New York Daily News reports that the 65-year-old will not face terrorism charges because the federal terrorism statutes focus on foreign and not homegrown extremists. Dogart also ran for Congress in 2014. Oh, he could have been in office.
And he looks like it, too.
Like the real life version of the grandfather on Family Guy, like that rich old man who's horrible to everybody.
Oh,
Lois's dad.
Oh shit, fucking.
That's what he fucking looks like.
Yeah, man, I hate that I forget. Carter Pewterschmidt.
He looks like a Carter. Look at his face. That is Carter Pewterschmidt.
You gotta go to winecellarmedia.com and click on this one to see that Martha Fracken guy.
Okay, so he ran for Congress in 2014, and allegedly, what the fuck, I think we're past allegedly, he went on right-wing online forums and spoke openly about using AR-15 assault rifles in the potential attack. And that's why gun reform doesn't matter. Alright, Dogart began to mastermind the heinous crime because he believed that Hancock, New York, had a small, bubbling Muslim community and was becoming a terrorist training ground. I want to know if he listens to Alex Jones or Drudge Report or any of these right-wing conspiracy theory outlets that are like, oh, well, you know, in upstate New York, they're training jihadists.
Oh, shit.
I want to know.
On a recent InfoWars this week, Jones claimed that that he was right about Jade Helm, and it was people like him that made it stop.
That thing where nothing happened?
That thing where they do what they always do. They fucking go... Like, they finna forget, like, not all of Texas is populated, and the military's gonna go train somewhere. They're not training to fuck with you. White men with guns are not training to take out white men with guns from their same nation state.
Jade Helm. All right. He wanted to commit the crime because he believed that the community was a terrorist training ground. Thankfully, law enforcement was able to stop it before it started. There's a gap in the law, says attorney Tahira Amatu-Wadud. Frankly, there is nothing on terrorism unless it's connected to a foreign element. You will never see the KKK charged with domestic terror, even though that's what they do. However, Amatu-Wadud is relieved to know that Dogart could face up to 10 years in prison. This nigga tried to blow up a fucking mosque and made plans on a website to kill a bunch of people, and he's only going to get maybe 10 years at the most. Great. They think that he would have gone through with the plans if not intercepted. He did it to intimidate Muslims throughout the country, a civilian population, and acted as if he was going to be the world police, which is very anti-government, Amat Wadul said.
Okay, and Michael Wright is up in the joint, and he said, Phoenix, come back to Facebook.
I don't want to. You can't make me.
Yeah, she's
can't make me.
Tweeting on the Twitters. And he said, he also said they're thinking they can do and say whatever they want because Trump has these folks.
Yeah. Which, I mean, you know, they've always been open and bold about what they do. That's always been a thing. But yeah, I think that it has gradually increased in the Trump era. Because he does have people like Bannon on his fucking Security Council. You know, Bannon has said, I want a world war. I want, you know, they're supporting Richard Spencer, Mr. I Want Ethnic Cleansing. You know, fucking Milo going to college campuses doxing students. Like, yeah, this is going to be a result of that. Unfortunately, though, nothing's going to happen. Like, they'll never be charged as terrorists. It's not going to stop hate speech. Like, it's fucking... All right. Oh, all these news stories are really fucking depressing.
It's fucking Free Thought Thursday, too. Fucking, it's gotta be sad shit that makes you have to think and talk about it.
All right.
Oh, yeah, we had to get to this one.
Gotta get to this one. All right. Child at faith school told to shun classmate with transgender parent.
And while you do that, this is what's fun about, like, see, you're halfway producing now. Now, just quick check the decibels. You look over and just look at them.
Can I just do that?
Yep, yeah, and it takes you right there. Okay, you see me, and then test yours.
Oh, yeah, mine are fine. My decibels are always fine. Yep, I've never had a low decibel problem on this show ever.
I have the microphone up past 10 and the gain at 75%. Yeah, of course.
Because I have a good voice and I don't have a decibel problem ever. All right, so teachers at a school in Manchester in the UK have told pupils to stop speaking to one of their classmates after they found out she has a transgender parent. Authorities have been urged to act amid concerns that the alleged treatment could breach equality legislation, which all schools must adhere to. Wait, you shitting me? You mean when there's government oversight, there's, like, regulations and shit? What?
No, when there's Warren G and Nate Dogg, there's, like, regulations and shit. I like that that beat kicked in right at that time. That shit made it hard.
Just gotta be extra black for no fucking reason. All right, it's fine. The child is a member of the ultra-Orthodox Jewish community and attends a strict faith school. The Jewish Telegraph reports classmates have been told not to communicate with her in, quote, any way, and the instruction came from teachers. The youngsters wrote a heartrending letter to the girl saying if they saw her, they would be forced to ignore her, but... they added that they would always love her and that they would pray for her. Our thoughts and prayers are with you. Thoughts and prayers are with you.
Yeah, you know, I can eat thoughts and I can drink prayers. And I can breathe faith.
If your faith was real, you could breathe it.
Jesus fucking Christ.
I need to get that meme up here just to have it on standby of, like, the guy drowning in the water and someone on the dock. Is saying, my thoughts and prayers are with you. And he's like, but I need a hand. Like, thoughts and prayers. The school, which cannot be named in order to protect the child's identity, is understood to be a private Jewish school serving children in the local area who are members of the ultra-Orthodox Jewish community. Some strict interpretations of the faith believe that being transgender represents a rejection of the Jewish community and that trans individuals should be shunned. In addition to being shunned at their current school, the girl's family fears they would be unable to change and move her to another school because all the Jewish faith schools in the area would refuse to let the children enroll due to transphobia among members of the community. Yay! That fucking... I feel so bad.
That shit is terrible. I'm in contact with Lola Phoenix right now. She's trying to figure out how to get on. So you keep rocking. You keep showing off on the show.
See what I have here. Did we do Jerry Sandusky?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, Jeff Sandusky. Yeah. Jeffrey.
Let's see. Well, you know what? I'm just gonna fucking read the one about Russia, because why the fuck not? I'll read that shit. And yeah, you know, we did cover it multiple times from multiple sources. However, this one, now, this is the update. Despite the fact that in Russia an estimated 12,000 women die annually from domestic violence, which equates to about one woman dying every 40 minutes, nonetheless, President Vladimir Putin signed into law a highly contentious amendment decriminalizing violence against family members. Providing that no bones are broken and the incident doesn't occur more than once a year, it was only that one time, because abusers never say that. So, providing that no bones are broken and the incident doesn't occur more than once a year, beatings will now carry a maximum prison sentence of 15 days or a fine. 15 whole fucking days. Alright. Prior to the signing of the amendment, such attacks would have previously been considered battery, and the perpetrator would have faced up to 2 years behind bars. More than 85% of legislators in Russia's Duma approved the bill last month, with proponents suggesting that it would help bolster traditional family values. To which I would then like to ask, what kind of family values do you have that they are bolstered by permitting domestic violence? I have questions. Speaking to CNN, a member of the Russian Duma, Vitaly Milanov, explained, I don't think we should violate the rights of the family, and sometimes a man... Oh my god. Alright. Brace yourselves, people. Brace your fucking selves. I don't think we should violate the rights of a family, and sometimes a man and a woman, or a wife and a husband have a conflict. Sometimes in this conflict, they use, I don't know, a frying pan, uncooked spaghetti, and so on.
What the fuck?
yeah, that's what the fuck I said.
That shit threw me off. Jesus fucking Christ. You picked this story, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Sometimes in this conflict, they use, I don't know, a frying pan, uncooked spaghetti, and so on. Okay, well, I would like to think that if somebody's coming at you with a frying pan, that would be a violent crime, but apparently not. No broken bones. Frankly speaking, what we call home violence is not home violence. It's a new picture of family relations created by the liberal media.
What? Who the fuck? What? Russia has a problem with the liberal media?
Yes, everybody has a problem with the liberal media.
Their media isn't... Ah, fuck it, man. Jesus Christ. Like, the only one that's, like, liberal is Russia Today.
I know.
And I don't know if anybody from Russia Today... I didn't see Lee Camp cover this story. Maybe Tom Hartman did.
The bill also garnered support from the Russian Orthodox Church. Yay, patriarchy. Which says it holds the family as sacred. Okay. Speaking on TV, priest Dmitry Smirnov, head of Russian Orthodox... They have a fucking commission called the Russian Orthodox Patriarchy Commission. Smirnov, head of the Russian Orthodox Patriarchy's Commission on Family Matters, suggested state interference in family members was an example of Western interventionism affecting Russian values. Some of the things happening in Northern Europe are now such that even Hitler couldn't have dreamed them up. Did you know that? These niggas sound like some Alex Jones niggas, I tell you. Yeah, Hitler couldn't have even dreamed that up. Because
so many of these motherfuckers are going in that direction, right? Like, there's some fuckstick named Le Pen.
Oh, Marie Le Pen in France, yeah.
Yeah, and then they had the Brexit, and then these, and then the Electoral College got this Trump thing. I like when they... Because I was thinking about some niggas, like a... I was trying to interact with the Twitter. Yes. I made two tweets. So, clearly I tweet my ass off, folks. And, yeah, somebody was like, well, we elected Trump. And I was like, I had no idea that we're all part of the Electoral College. That's some wild shit.
Right? Seriously. People have been saying that constantly on Twitter. Like, oh, it's Susan Sarandon's fault. It's the Bernie Bros' fault. Anybody who voted third party is responsible for Trump. And I'm like... But Hillary already won the popular vote by millions of people, so...
And a lot of these people, yo, stop talking about politics. If you're, again, you people that root for the Democrats are shitty surrogates, and you fuck up elections for them. If you are a white woman for Hillary Clinton, you're a big part of why she lost, because you were an asshole that pushed people away.
I mean, but that's the thing that they're... See, now I'm kind of on a little bit of a tangent, but that's the thing, though, is they'll talk all this shit about it was a third party, it was Bernie Bros, it was, you know, people who didn't vote, but it's like, when you already win by the popular vote and you still don't win the fucking election, the problem is not voters, and you should be taking all this fucking, like, whining over Twitter, yeah, I said whining, that's what you're doing, and fucking dismantling the shit out of the Electoral College, because that's why Hillary lost. You know, despite Bernie or bust, despite third party, despite whoever the fuck wrote in Harambe, Hillary still had the votes and still lost. That's an Electoral College problem, not a third party existing problem.
Yep, and I'm gonna give just as much a fuck about the Electoral College as you do about the superdelegates.
Oh, there's that too. All right, and then let's see, back to this story. Human Rights Watch tried to persuade Parliament to reject a law which it said represented a huge step backward for Russia. Yulia Gorbunova, the organization's Russian researcher, said it was already difficult for victims of domestic violence to seek help in Russia and that a new law would put victims' lives at even greater risk. I like how they put that in quotes like that's not actually gonna fucking happen. Put victims' lives at even greater risk, maybe. I don't know. Let's use scare quotes. That might not actually be a real thing. Fuck.
And they said no broken bones in once a year.
Yeah. But see, and that's something, too, that it leaves out, because it is specifically no broken bones, but, like, a nigga could put your fucking face through a window and, like, fuck your shit, like, cut your shit up.
Yeah, you could bleed a lot without, like, breaking any bones.
Like, I don't...
You can bleed a lot.
Like, what if you get shot? I don't know. What if you get stabbed? I mean, I don't fucking... And you don't...
Yeah, like, I'll go to an extreme real-life example. Yes, it's an extreme example, but Jesus fucking Christ, it happened, and it was parent to child, when one of the kids in Spanaway got ripped up with a chainsaw. No broken bones.
Damn.
Yeah. That shit was gnarly. Fucking wild, man. All right.
Yeah.
You at the bottom of this one?
Yeah. And then according to official statistics, around 40% of all violent crimes in Russia are committed within the family. So, awesome. They just decriminalized 40% of their crimes.
Okay, so this should let me,
Yes.
Click this.
Which that makes
me... How the fuck do I call them?
Oh, I don't know. And, you know, while you're figuring that out, I'm just going to say that makes me wonder now in Russia, do they not have a prison-for-profit system? Because if 40% of violent crime is no...
Ah!
Ah-ha!
While you're figuring that out,
I'm
just going to say that makes me wonder now...
Hey!
Hey! Okay, you want to turn off your volume on the Facebook Live?
Yeah, hold on one second. While you're figuring that out.
Ironically,
there we go.
All right, and can you hear Phoenix Khalid? Or you say something?
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Excellent.
All right, so, and you are on video, so you're on the Facebook Live, too.
Hey!
All right, and Phoenix Khalid was going to bring up what you wrote on Medium.com.
Yes.
That was growing up with abusive parents.
Yes.
And then, and then I passed the microphone off to you two, and I'm just producing.
Cool.
Yeah, I was actually looking at a bunch of your stuff on Medium, and this one, I was like, ah, this is, like, my life. What is this? yeah. It was something that you wrote about 9 ways toxic parenting impacted your non-monogamy. Yes?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a really good one. That was from December. So, y'all, check it out. It's on her, on their Medium page, so please check that out. You want to... You want to read it, or you just want to go through your points?
Sure. I mean, if you want to go through the points, I can also explain kind of how I came to those conclusions, because it, you know, as you can probably understand, it took a lot of, like, unpacking and, like, going, yes, okay, wow, this is a thing for me to actually figure it out.
Yeah. And I'm sorry if I keep looking confused, because I see your face in two spots and I don't know which one to look at.
That's okay.
Look, okay. So a couple of things in here that really, the first one actually just stuck out to me huge, was using non-monogamy to prove your worth. I'll read a little bit here. When you live with the toxic parents who turned you into a parent, there are some people who respond to that man with unwavering perfectionism. You grow up quickly and learn how to manage a lot, but your first definition of love in means is tied to taking care of people. As much as one may be a relationship anarchist, most healthy adults should have an understanding of the appropriateness of asking for emotional support from people. Yeah?
Yeah.
Talk to me about that.
So, I mean, this is something that I feel like I've been a little bit saved from just by virtue of being on the asexual spectrum, but I've seen a lot of people who just basically, like, in their approach to non-monogamy, they just take on as many partners as possible, mm-hmm, because they want to help as many people as possible, and a lot of their partnerships are really draining and really difficult. And it's not like there's anything wrong with them or with the people that they're with, because they're all really great people, but they find people who are in such turmoil in their lives, or who are going through a lot, mm-hmm, who require a lot of support, and they're, like, emotionally supporting, like, 5 different people, right, and nobody's really supporting them, and they're not, like, used to asking for that from other people. They're just so used to people taking that, and they're also so used to taking care of people as a sign of love that they just end up doing it to the nth degree. And also, it does sort of, I do feel like, you know, even though I don't tend to like take care of tons of people, I do sort of see taking care of people mm-hmm. as loving them, because that was something that was either expected of me or it was something that I did to prove my love. And I think especially if you're read as a woman or socialized as a woman, or you know, you have this already this societal expectation that you ought to show love by caring for someone.
Yeah.
So it sort of all combines into one, and I think it's a big thing that I see a lot of people, even, you know, amongst people who really do need emotional support, you know, who aren't in any, you know, who are dealing with their own sort of things in their lives that are of no fault of their own. You know, you might have like one partner who's like, you know, trans, who's going through like trying to transition and not really sure of how, you know, all their family's going to take it, and they're dealing with harassment and violence, and that's one thing, and then you're dealing with somebody else who has abusive parents, and then you're dealing with like, and so it's not even that there's anything wrong with anybody like inherently, or that anyone's trying to take advantage of anybody. It's just literally that you seek out these situations where you are trying to take care of someone and trying to fix someone because you're so used to that growing up that it's just, you do it without even thinking, and then you're left with, you know, as I think I said, like butter scraped over too much bread. You're just too stretched, you can't. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the production note: does your microphone adjust? Like, does it move?
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. We move it up a little bit, and then see if we get a little less popping.
No worries.
Yeah. All right, but we can hear you.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, no, I thought that was a really great point, because I have found that that's something I do, is very hesitant to ask for support from other people, because I just assume I'm never going to get it, so I don't, you know, and they're like, oh, well, this is just what we do, this is how, you know, this is how it goes. But yeah, learning boundaries is very, very difficult when you were raised in an abusive situation. It definitely impacts that. One of the other things was you end up being bullied by partners, right? In toxic parenting, one suppresses their feelings in order to take care of and soothe their parents. Many people assume that because non-monogamy challenges the status quo and that society provides in heterosexual monogamy, that it's inherently egalitarian. But don't ever underestimate an abuser's ability to twist anything to their benefit.
Yeah, that's a big thing, because a lot of people really feel like non-monogamy is inherently egalitarian, it's inherently more free, it's inherently better, and that everything that they see monogamy as inherently flawed and as this thing that's attached. I mean, they're not really looking at it through enough of a critical lens. They're just sort of seeing monogamy attached with all of these things, which, you know, it's valid, because a lot of things have been attached to monogamy. The type of monogamy that society endorses is a very specific, unhealthy monogamy, but
right.
It doesn't mean that you have to be that way in order to be monogamous. So it's like, I feel like people, and I see this a lot, and I see people just, you know, who are with really terrible people. And the thing of it is that I really, and I'm it makes me so angry, because I feel like people are always, it's sort of like this, the thing that they say happens in BDSM. So in BDSM, they say, oh, it's sort of like a Darwinism kind of thing. You know, if somebody's really terrible and abusive, eventually no one will talk to them and they'll be slowly eked out of the community, which is bullshit.
Yeah, it's complete not at all.
Bullshit. And I feel like with non-monogamy, really abusive people can have really a lot of functional relationships, because they're with people, you're never with anyone 24/7. They can be with people in a short amount of time where either A, their abusive sort of characteristics don't show up,
mm-hmm.
or B, the person has such a wide time in between when they see them that there's time for them to go, oh, maybe they didn't mean it that way, or,
right.
you know, they second guess all the time. I think it makes it easier for nasty people to have functional relationships. And I mean, it's my own personal experience. Like, I've lived with, you know, people who are polyamorous and who were, you know, quite prolific in the community and leaders and had plenty of relationships, who told me flat out, like, that emotional abuse doesn't exist. Who, one person, like, invited me to go to their big expensive birthday party that people had to pay to go to, and I have social anxiety and was like, I don't know if I want to go, I'm kind of nervous. And then when I finally said I wanted to go, they were like, well, you know, you can go, but if you bug anyone out, then you have to leave.
What?
Like, yeah, like, these people are terrible, and a lot of people can be really terrible, and I think they get away with it because, you know, people don't want to think that their partner is bullying them, and they, a lot of people that I see who are bullied by people are people who come from abusive backgrounds, and they're just sort of like, well, I might feel like I'm being bullied, but they'll dismiss this as jealousy. They'll be like, oh, I must just be jealous, or I must just have some problem, and not really see it for what it is. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
And, you know, that's something I've seen too in a lot of BDSM communities with the whole, like, oh, well, people will leave them be, but the thing is that it's very difficult to report abuse as well, because there's an assumption that, like, I haven't seen it, so are you sure that's the way it happened? And you're already in a more marginalized space, so it gets progressively harder and harder to report things because you have fewer and fewer resources to reach out to. And that goes, you know, it goes back, this is something I've seen with fucking 50 Shades. But, you know, that whole, like, that's how BDSM, like, no, that's not how BDSM works at all. That's, you know, really inappropriate. It's abusive, and you're supposed to respect boundaries. But I find that that's an issue, too, is there's not enough educational resources for people who are getting into poly relationships, or people who are involved in BDSM, or anything that's not, you know, cis hetero patriarchal standard, because you aren't necessarily sure of what it's okay to ask for as far as what boundaries should be. And abusers like to keep it that way. You know, like, yeah, I mean, we could give you this list of information and educational resources, but we won't.
And in general, I don't think necessarily society teaches you anything healthy about boundaries at all, even in within conventional relationships.
Not at all.
Just, you know, I mean, if you think about just how jealousy is sort of seen and analyzed, it's always seen as love, mm-hmm. especially when it's expressed by men violently.
Yes.
Like, it's like, yeah, no, that's a sign that he loves you and cares about you. Like, people have terrible boundaries because of the way that, you know, the type of relationship that society encourages anyways. And the thing that drives me crazy is that non-monogamous people and a specific kind of people will sit there and swear up and down all day that, like, oh my god, the society doesn't accept us, we're you know, downcast, da da da.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, they expect people to just be able to do non-monogamy without having to unpack anything that they brought in from this supposed society that hates them. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Yes. Yeah, and I think that that's a thing that there's almost like a knee-jerk reaction to it, where it's like, well, I'm not doing the societal accepted thing, therefore mm-hmm. whatever I'm doing is good. And it's like, no. Actually, no, that's not how that works. You can bring in quite a bit of bullshit because you were raised in a very unhealthy society. And people don't always want to admit that. Alright, this one speaks to my soul. Your number 3 was, silence becomes more comfortable. If you grow up in an environment where you are encouraged to hide something for a parent, it messes you up in your understanding of justice and fairness. It's one thing for a grown adult to ask another grown adult who doesn't rely on them for anything to lie and hide things, but it's another when it's a child relying on a parent for any kind of support. And it makes for a confusing ride trying to understand anything when secrets do get out. I believe that within non-monogamy communities, people don't speak out about abusive partners because they have a fear of looking jealous. Yeah. So silence becomes the preferred way of coping and dealing with things, not only if you have been with someone who is toxic, but if you hear that someone else is toxic. Yeah.
In my own personal experience, like, So I have a hard time establishing boundaries about communication because, and even communicating with, like, roommates, because I know two settings. I know everyone's quiet and nobody says anything and everyone pretends to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there's a huge argument, somebody gets kicked out of the house, some shit goes down. Like, those are my two levels. So even when I'm dealing with people that, like, I don't even have a romantic relationship with, I'm like, okay, I don't really trust that if I bring a concern to them and I say, you've upset me, or you've hurt me, or you've done this, mm-hmm. I don't trust that they're going to be like, oh, I'm sorry.
Right.
So I have to wait until it gets to a point where I have to yell in their face,
mm-hmm.
you know, until I'm comfortable to say, you messed it up. Like, even the flatmate that I'm living with now, like, I don't really know them very well, and they don't clean the kitchen, and so I had to wait until I was really angry to be like, why don't you clean the kitchen? Like, I can't go in between that. And I think if you live in a situation where you've, like, you know, it's been like that, it's been really volatile, you don't want to set off the boundary, you don't want to rock the apple cart, because every time the apple cart that's been rocked in your life, some really terrible thing has happened. Like, either there's been a fight or people, like, in my, literally growing up, like, you know, my mom is gay, but she stayed with my dad, who was really terrible to her because they wanted to have a normal family, or that's what he convinced her. Right. So I had took care of three other kids that weren't hers. You know, one of my brothers got, you know, tried to hit her and got kicked out. Another one of my brothers tried to hit her and got kicked out. She got thrown out in the middle of it. Like, so every time I process a conflict, I think there's a possibility that that conflict could end with somebody being kicked out, somebody being fought. Like, it's impossible, even though it seems silly, maybe to somebody looking on the outside, like, well, why can't you just tell your flatmates to, like, clean up their shit? For me, it's like, well, what if I have to fight somebody? Like, I need to be in the mindset of, like, I need to fight somebody.
Right, I have to be ready for anything that could possibly happen.
Exactly.
And something else I find with that, too, is that then also when there is a huge amount of conflict that happens when people try to talk about boundaries or feelings, is that then the end result, everything's fucked up, right? Somebody got punched in the face, somebody got put out, the cops got called, and it's your fault because you're the one who said something. So, like, not only do you have to be prepared for any possible outcome, you also have to know in the back of your head when you're doing it that someone's going to come and be like, and it's because of you. So, like, do I really want to say something? You know? So, yeah, the boundary issues with that. And I also, you know, was thinking as I was reading this, when it comes to silence in abusive relationships, is like the that silent passive aggressive thing that people do. Mm-hmm. You know, where they're like, it is a trip when you grow up or are in a long term situation with somebody who is silently abusive to you. Yeah. And, you know, they'll just be like, if you've ever had anybody fold socks and passive aggressively throw them at you to let them know they're mad at you without saying they're mad at you, that shit's fucked up.
Yeah.
That just fucked up.
There was like a brilliant Tumblr post or somewhere where I saw it screen capped. It was something like, if you've never had anyone like passive aggressively do something at you, that's completely not even a mean thing. That's why you keep asking if people are okay, because you don't believe it. You think that people are just not telling you the truth, because people have in the past.
Mm-hmm. Well, that, and because they're not saying, well, when they're being quiet, because they're not saying they're okay. So it's like, and also because in abusive relationships, they're very volatile and things can go from quiet to fucking batshit, in a matter of minutes. So calm can be terrifying in its own way. Silence can be terrifying in its own way because something really bad might be on the horizon. So yeah, I totally get that. Totally get that. Your number four was guilt prevents you from setting boundaries. Yes. Parents can control with money and guilt. And in my opinion, being controlled with guilt has a specific impact on people in non-monogamous relationships. Whenever you're doing something new, it's a process of understanding yourself and your boundaries. One of the reasons I tell any newbie to non-monogamy to never create any rules where anyone has to obtain permission for a new date or anything else is because sometimes when you're doing something new, you don't know you have a boundary until it's been crossed. And having to go back on something that you previously said was fine creates guilt and sometimes resentment.
Yeah, I hate that permission thing, but people feel really comfortable with that. You know, they feel like it's a good step. They go, all right, well, before I get a date, I'm going to ask you if it's okay. Mm-hmm. And it does work for some people. I'm not saying it can never work, but I'm just saying that, like, you know, when you're being asked, you know, are you okay? You could be okay in that moment. And then the next moment you're like, actually, I'm not okay with this. But by that time, you've already given permission.
Right.
So it's like you can't really take that back. And if you do try to take that back, then either you look jealous or controlling, or you don't want to do it because you know that your partner will potentially resent you because you're now saying they can't do something that you said they could do. So that's why I just hate, like, I think permission can work sometimes, but as well, I just think it's impractical. Like, if it's partners that do casual things, but, like, you know, if I'm dating someone who does, you know, who does have casual sex, and that's something they want to do, and that's fine, it's not something I want to do, but I don't want them to call me at 3 o'clock in the morning and be like, can I sleep with this person? Like, I want to be in bed. I'm not don't call me at 3. Like, if what if I have a bad day, mm-hmm. and then on top of it, you know, they're not here because they're at a party, and, like, I'm going to be sad about that, even right. if I'm happy for them because I'm lonely, mm-hmm. and then they're going to call me at 3 o'clock and be like, can I have permit? Like, no, it's just, you know, for me, it doesn't make a lot of sense, but I think people do it because it makes them think that they're safer. And even people who are in who come from abusive past, because it makes it feel like they have control over something, so they feel a bit safer. But you end up opening a whole can of worms, especially if you come from a past where, like, you've been guilted into doing stuff, where, like, or if you don't do something, it makes you feel guilty. Like, guilt is a huge thing mm-hmm. that can impact every bit of your decisions. Because even if you are with a partner who doesn't guilt you, you're still going to behave in that, you know, oh my God, what if I do this? And they turn around and they tell me I'm a terrible human for it. Right. So, like, you're still going to behave that way.
Oh, absolutely that. And then I also find that there's, like, an extra level to it. If you're coming out of an abusive relationship or you were raised in an abusive household, it's already incredibly difficult to set boundaries. So then if you do set a boundary and you're like, but I didn't do it correctly and we need to, like, you know, readjust this, then you feel like a failure because you were, like, all proud. You're like, I finally set a boundary. You're like, oh, just fucking kidding. No, the fuck I didn't. Like, you know, so there's also that sense of, like, failure that goes along with it as well, I find. But, yeah. Yeah.
I think, too, like, there's a lot, and specifically with non-monogamy, there's a lot of pressure to be able to do it right. Mm-hmm. And, like, in a way that, because, like, with monogamy, like, there's plenty of jokes. Like, comedians make tons of jokes about how, like, terrible non-monogamy can be, how terrible monogamy can be, how much of a struggle it can be. So people can culturally accept that you cannot have a good time with it. But with non-monogamy, it's like, you know, if your relationship isn't working, then people are like, well, it's because it's open, that's why it's, you know.
Yeah.
So you're pressured to always be having a good time and always be perfect and always be able to prove how much you can do non-monogamy. So as well, on top of that, not only are you failing on your ability to say, I can do this, I'm a responsible adult, but also you're not doing non-monogamy correctly, and maybe you can't handle it, maybe you're not cool enough for the club.
Right, you know, yes.
Which doesn't help.
No, it does not. It does not. You know, adding stigma. What could go wrong? Right. Your number 5 was, you struggle to ask for what you want. It's an ironic thing to be forced to grow up early, but never have autonomy or independence of an adult. Ha, yeah. Let's see. You have been described as scarily efficient by your employers. That's what they say about you.
Which is weird, because I expect to be, like, I always think that I do a terrible job.
Yes.
And employers will tell me, like, oh, no, you do a great job, you do a great job. And, like, I'll have to, as much as I really don't, like, necessarily endorse everything that Dr. Phil says, because Dr. Phil, he has this one saying of, like, it takes 1,000 attaboys to get rid of one you suck. And I think that that's really true. Like, you know, and abusive people have that in spades. Mm-hmm. Or people who have been in abusive relationships have that in spades.
Yeah, and I think that that's an intentional thing, right? Because it's easy to keep somebody in an abusive relationship when you have them convinced that they can't do anything better or be better. Exactly. So you need them to have low self-esteem, essentially. Okay, sorry, I got sidetracked here. If you've always been given responsibility but never independence, it's easy to take on the challenge of providing support to as many people as possible without asking for anything for yourself. But your adult decisions have been undermined, so you learn not to have any. Yeah. Asking for what you want involves having autonomy, and you have learned that having autonomy is something that makes other people unhappy, so you begin to fear making your partners angry if you ask for what you want. That is an excellent insight.
Yeah, I think that, like, so in addition to, like, my mom coming from, like, all of the difficult background that she did have, she also has borderline personality disorder, and it manifests differently in different people, and it's not like it has a lot of stigma within the mental health community, but it's not an impossible thing to treat. It is treatable, but if you don't get it treated, it's quite difficult. Mm-hmm. And I think if you read a lot of stuff about people who were raised with it by people with borderline personality disorder, a lot of people will say that, you know, they have to manage, you know, one of the books about it is called Stop Walking on Eggshells, because you have to kind of manage mm-hmm. a situation where you're like, okay, is this person going to flip out? I don't want to do this because I'm unsure of how it's going to affect my, you know, you have to sort of make the adult decision about your parents' emotional well-being mm-hmm. when you shouldn't have to make that decision. And I feel like you know, because I've always been kind of independent in one way, but I've never had that kind of autonomy to sort of say, all right, well, not only are you having the responsibilities of an adult, but we're going to validate your opinion and your feelings as an adult. So I feel like if you don't validate your own opinions and your own feelings, and you don't think that it's worth anything, you know, you're not going to ask for anything, because you're going to learn that you function best in your abusive sort of situation when you have no needs and when you take care of everyone else's. And I think it's impossible to start asking for what you want, because you may not even be able to know, because you've ignored it for so long that you just, you know, oh, I don't need any needs, I'm good. So, like, you know, it becomes impossible. And I think it takes a long time for people to have to, like, ask for something and trust that their partner is not going to be furious with them. Because in the past, when you've asked for something, it's either been mocked, or, you know, it's been used as a way to get to you, or you've just, it's just not been acknowledged, so you've learned to stop asking.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the comment section, too. I see Becker in there. Becker said her mother had BPD and bipolar, and noted that if you ask for something, you risk being told no, or you're being unreasonable, or having it done poorly or passive-aggressively. Easier to get shit done by yourself. The efficiency thing, I totally relate. That is a huge thing, too, is not just that someone might say no or ridicule you for it or weaponize it, but they will do it in the most half-ass, passive-aggressive way as, like, a punishment. Oh, that is a thing. Yeah, that's a thing.
Or it's something where you, like, I've been in partnerships, not necessarily with people who've been abusive, but I've, like, asked them, you know, like, can you make dinner that night? And then it'll be, like, I'll go home, and it'll be, like, 7 o'clock, and they're just sitting there, and they haven't made dinner, and I feel like I gotta go, what are you doing? Are you gonna make dinner? And then it's 8 o'clock, and they haven't made any dinner, and I have to be like, are you gonna... So it ends up being, like, I gotta manage... Even if I've asked them to do something, I've gotta manage it and make sure it gets done, so I may as well just do it anyway.
Exactly. Or they'll do it intentionally wrong. I've had that happen before. That was something that was very common in the household, was like, oh, we're gonna do this thing for you, and then, like, do the complete opposite of everything I ever wanted. That was, like, a huge thing when it came to, holidays and birthdays with, like, presents. Was like, give us a list of what you want. By the way, we got you nothing on this list and got things that we expressly know you hate, but you can't say you don't like it. That was a very big thing in the family. So
I had a, like, one time I got a surprise on my birthday I didn't expect, and I'm on the autistic spectrum, so, and a huge introvert, and have social anxiety. So my surprise was all of my relatives coming down and coming to a birthday party. And it was appreciated, but I was just like, oh, I was quite overwhelmed.
Right.
And I remember saying, like, are there any other surprises? And my, like, the person that my mom was dating at the time legit called me, like, a selfish bitch.
Yeah.
Because, so, I'm not going to ask anything again.
Exactly. The number 7 on here, I think, is very typical of anybody who's ever been in an abusive relationship. You accept personal digs as jokes. Yeah? Yeah. I don't even know if I need to go through and read. I think you could probably riff on that one. I think that's a very common thing, right? Across the spectrum of people who've been in abusive situations.
Yeah, I think especially, too, because, like, in the kind of interactions that I've had with parents, I've either had parents who will, like, personally dig other people. So I remember very vividly, like, telling people about this, like, wonderful memory I had with my father, where he was going through my yearbook and, like, making fun of how the teachers looked, and I thought he was being funny, but everyone else was like, wow, he sounds kind of like an asshole. And I was like, oh. So, and then on top of that, like, the kind of situations that I'd have with my mom, we would have these discussions in front of other people that looked quite friendly and funny, and we were sort of, like, digging at each other, but it could easily escalate. Like, I remember one discussion, I let her read my live journal, like, back when I had a live journal, and, like, nobody read it except, like, people that I knew.
Right.
And I let her read it for a short period of time, and then it was at a time when I got, like, my nipples pierced, and I posted, like, a picture, not of my whole chest, but of just, like, one of my nipples, and I don't know, just because it's not that big of a deal. And then I remember we were at, like, my great-grandmother's breakfast day, Sunday breakfast, you know, and we were going and then she's like, well, at least I didn't post a picture of my boobs on the internet. And it's just like things like that, where it's like stuff can get, like, can be said in jest,
yeah,
that really heartbreaking and really mm-hmm. difficult. And like my dad used to do personal digs on me all the time. He used to like pinch my stomach and say pinch an inch, like to say mm-hmm. that I was fat. Right. And he never says to you you're fat. He goes pinch an inch. Oh, I'm just joking. And then like, you know, or he one time like he compared me to the donkey from Shrek. So like all of these stuff, this stuff is like really painful. But because it's said in this funny way, mm-hmm. you're meant to just be like, oh, ha, 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 ha. And then when you grow up learning that, you know, this is funny. It's funny to make fun of you. It's when you have that feeling inside of like being hurt, you're just supposed to ignore that. And I think definitely if you grow up like that, you know, then you're going to accept that in your personal relationships. You're not yes. going to think like, I literally witnessed a situation where somebody had like one of their partners and they were talking and we were outside and they were talking about how there was no logical reason for him to not sleep with our sister. And she was like, there's a logical reason. I don't want you to do it. And I'd be really angry with you if you did it. And he's like, yeah, but there's no logical reason. Like he was debating it.
Right. Yeah.
She was getting visibly upset. And like, even me, who's like quite sometimes difficult for me to read people's emotions, I could tell she was getting upset. Mm-hmm. And like, she ended up running away and crying. And like, nobody said anything. And like when I talked to him about it later, he was like, yeah, I did that on purpose. And like,
oh, okay.
Yeah, he was terrible, thank you. But my point is that like, because it's said in an either joking or a kind of debatey way, mm-hmm. it's sort of minimized and you sort of go, oh, well, maybe I'm just being too sensitive. So you definitely have that situation where if you grow up hearing this type of shit all the time, mm-hmm. then later on you just accept it. Because you don't know any better.
Yeah. And something that I find to be very frustrating about that is you're often told that the problem is you're too serious or you're too sensitive, but at the end of the day, these people who are making these jokes know exactly what they're doing, and you can tell because they have their own set of boundaries, right? Like, mm-hmm. it's okay for them to go up to you and tell you that you should lose weight in a joking way or in a constructive mm-hmm. way, right? I meant it as constructive criticism. But they wouldn't say that, for example, to a woman that they go to church with. And it's like, well, if it was legitimately constructive criticism and you legitimately think being overweight is this bad, why do you only say it to me? You know, like exactly. that sort of thing. When it comes to like making fun of appearance, when it comes to making fun of how people dress or how people talk or, you know, weight issues or what people are doing, I find that's a thing. It's often perceived as it's a joke and the problem is you if you don't take mm-hmm. the joke. But at the same time, they don't tell that joke to other people because they fucking know it's bullshit, you know. And that's where that whole red flag thing comes in. It's like, so do other people think their jokes are actually funny because they're not passive-aggressive digs? Oh, okay. You know, you have to sort of critically examine that, you know? Yeah.
And I think, like, if you're in any kind of marginalized community as well, you get this all the time from society. You get, you know, constantly, how many times are, like, you know, if somebody who's LGBT is like, oh, I think somebody's being homophobic or transmisogynistic or transphobic, how many people are like, well, it's probably not like that, especially, mm-hmm. like, people of color. Like, how many times, anytime you sort of interpret a situation as being, you know, oh, I don't know, maybe somebody's being racist towards me, the immediate response from any white person or any person in any position of power is, oh, maybe you didn't, you know, maybe you're interpreting it wrong. Right. So, like, if
maybe
you also
have that on top of
it.
You're overreacting. Mm-hmm. Always overreacting. Exactly. Yes. Yes. All right. Your number 8 on here, you don't believe someone is okay. If you grew up with a toxic parent who hid their true emotions from you and then unleashed holy hell when you broke a plate, you stop being able to trust when anyone tells you they're okay. Passive-aggressive behavior or having a parent who is passive until they explode out of proportion with aggression will make you constantly fear the impending storm, and the calm will make you fear it that much more. Ha, yeah. And then you go on to mention constant vigilance. I think that's a very good mm-hmm. term for it. You know, everything has to be okay, and you get concerned mm-hmm. that things are not going to be okay, and if one little thing goes wrong, like, everything's going to fucking go to shit. So you have to constantly be in that state of anxiety and hyper-perfection, just no matter what. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think definitely, like, you know, because I had a sort of situation where, like, My dad was the kind of person where he would be angry and he wouldn't say anything until, you know, something small happened, and then he would just explode. Like, right. in a way that I didn't expect it or see it coming, mm-hmm. he would just all of a sudden be really angry. And I think I also have been with, you know, had a lot of parents who were like that. Like my stepmother, the person that my dad married, just anything. Like she would, you know, she would get mad at me for not taking my pill on time. But if I never came up, you know, and didn't take my pill, she wouldn't forget about it, and I wouldn't get in trouble. Mm-hmm. You know, she'd pick something that she really unlike. You know, especially because at the time I was a Wiccan, mm-hmm. and she like went nuts over that, took all of my Wiccan stuff, forced me to go to church, was like really intense about, like, she would just pick shit and just be obsessed about it and just like drill it into me. And so I had to be constantly on the kind of guard for somebody being that way towards me. So I think it's hard for me to believe that people are okay. So mm-hmm. if I've upset somebody, or even if they don't even have to be upset, mm-hmm. I just have to think, is this something that's going to make them unhappy?
Yes.
You know, am I not performing to the standard by which they would want me to perform? They're right. going to be unhappy. They won't tell me. And then all of a sudden, all of my world's going to break loose and everything's going to shatter in my face. So I have to try and prevent that as much as possible. I mean, one time I can't even remember what the argument was about, but I had an argument with a partner. I got home from work. I went to the grocery store. I got boxes and I packed all like 95% of my shit in 45 minutes. Because mm-hmm. I was like, right, we had an argument, we're gonna break up, I'm yep. packing my shit. Like, and you just learn how to be on guard, and it's mm-hmm. tough to like learn to switch that off and just trust that somebody's okay, because yeah. you have to put a lot of trust in them that, you know, they're not just gonna turn around and go, at you, mm-hmm. you know.
And it's also exhausting, too, because hypervigilance it's stressful, it's a constant state of anxiety and trying to micromanage things and be a perfectionist and look at every detail, because you don't want that... Because it can be that one tiny thing that can set off an abusive person, so you're trying to make sure that one tiny thing never happens. But then it's, you know, incredibly difficult, because you're like, I have to look at absolutely everything 10 times and do it all right now just to make sure that, you know, the plates didn't get put in the wrong, you know, in the wrong stack or something silly like that. So yeah, I think that there is definitely that exhaustion that comes with it. It's tiring. It's so tiring. Ugh.
Yeah.
Okay, and then your last one on here was number 9. You don't think fears are worth addressing. Yes. People sometimes tell me that my parents, despite their actions, truly do love me and want what's best for me. And that's because they grew up in an environment where they may have argued with their parents because they knew that disagreeing or even disobeying would not result in the end of a relationship with their parents. People with toxic parents can't say the same, and sometimes toxic people like to go out with a bang. If you're used to loving someone you're afraid of and dealing with a large amount of fear regularly, your brain copes with it better by lowering your sensitivity to it. You don't think anything of being afraid in certain situations because your meter for appropriate fear has been recalibrated to the environment you grew up in rather than the environment you're currently in. It's a good one. Yes.
Yeah, I think that's probably the most frustrating thing about telling people about my parents and the relationship, because my dad disowned me when I was 16, more or less, so that he didn't have to pay child support. Mm-hmm. And my mom, because of the issues that we have, you know, we don't have a relationship that's a relationship, and we don't really speak to each other. And like the only time she will speak to me now is to send me an email and say that I'm wrong about something, yeah. or that I've fucked up in some way. You know, she doesn't ask me how I am. We don't have that kind of a relationship. Mm-hmm. So like when I tell people this kind of this thing, they'll just say, "Oh, I think that they just really love you." And the thing of it is that maybe they do. You know, maybe deep down inside, my mom does love me. But at the end of the day, that's not what. Or what can make a functional relationship?
Right.
Like, there's accountability. There's, you know, a mutual respect that has to happen for any kind of relationship to exist. Mm-hmm. And I think that, like, you know, the funny thing is, so that one of my first partners didn't have a very good relationship with his family either. So we kind of bonded over that. And the partner that I have now has a good relationship with it, more or less a good. He has several, you know, he has several brothers and sisters, and he has, you know, parents. And I remember, like, I was terrified to meet them because I'm like, crap, this is another family that can reject me. I'm really scared of pissing them off. And my partner's like, I don't care if you piss them off. If they don't like you, screw them. Because he is able to have that kind of a disagreement with his parents and them not, like, completely disown him or chuck him out.
Right.
Whereas, like, I'm sitting there like, are you kidding me? Like, you know, you're not absolutely terrified that they won't like me. Like, you're not bothered or worried. And he's like, so it's that kind of a thing. Like, I haven't had very many arguments with my mother. Like, we've had, you know, shouting matches. And the first time that I ever sort of challenged her on something and said, listen, you've upset me, you've hurt me, I expect you to apologize and be accountable for this, that was the end of our relationship. Yeah. So if you are in a situation where you can't trust that the relationship that you have with your parent is going to end well if you do confront them, you're going to learn that your fears aren't worth it, because your fears mean that this relationship will end. And you know, and I've had that with all sorts, like my aunt, who when I asked her to share my surgery fundraiser, when I, you know, and she, I didn't ask her, I was like, if you have any money, that's fine, but I come from really poor people, so I wasn't expecting anything. I was just like, if you can share it, I would appreciate it. And she didn't share it, and in the back of my head, I was like, okay, I've got two choices. I've got, you know, I can just ignore this and ignore the fact that she's ignoring me, or I can go, listen, this is important to me, you're my family, I expect you to care about things that are important to me. And then I took that route. And what did I get? She said to me that, you know, oh, I'm tired of abnormal things because my mom is a lesbian. So that's, you know, part of the abnormality. And I just want a normal family. And I don't understand why you need this surgery. And blah, 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 blah. Like, so I learned, you know, and that was kind of a bit of, like, we didn't have the best and most communicative relationship before, but that made me learn, like, okay, that's kind of the end of our relationship. Because I was just like, well, fine, if you don't want abnormal, then you don't got it, bye. Like, right. So if you're in this kind of situation where you have these relationships with people that are just going to end the second that you demand anything for yourself, you're going to stop demanding things for yourself, because you don't trust that A, it's going to be acknowledged, B, that it's not going to be, like we said before, weaponized or used against you, or C, that it's just going to destroy everything.
Right.
And if you're in a romantic relationship and you're having a good time, like, there's always, even with really shitty, horrible, abusive, terrible people, there's always good sides to it, because there has to be. Because if somebody just walks up to you and starts, like, hitting you or telling you your shit,
right,
like, you're not really going to go with that. So they do that on purpose. They have good sides so that you're like, oh, but I want to stay for the good. You know, it's hard to let that go, because everyone's got needs, and a lot of people have, you know, needs to be in a relationship and be romantic and loved, especially people come from abusive relationships. You get a little bit of a taste of someone giving a shit about you. It's hard to let that go, and you don't want to jeopardize that. And if bringing up your fears is going to jeopardize that, it makes more sense to keep your mouth shut.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that there's also, like, a lot of inadvertent gaslighting from society as a whole, that, you know, your partner, if you, you know, if it's a parent-child relationship or a romantic relationship or, you know, even a friendship where someone is being abusive to you and you're like, I think that this is not okay and they're violating my boundaries and I think that this is bad and they're not treating me properly. And then someone's like, but they still love you at the end of the day. Your parents still love you, or, you know, that bullshit guy still loves you. Like, but then, like, but this is the thing, because you're already coming from a traumatized, abused position, you already question yourself. You're like, well, this is what I think happened, but I'm not sure that this is what happened, because sometimes I overreact, and maybe I did fuck that thing up, and maybe this is my fault, I don't, but I'm gonna say something, and then somebody, your first outside source that you're seeking, like, a sort of confirmation bias is like, no, they really love it, and you're like, oh, I'm just fucked up. I don't fucking know anymore. I think that's a thing, and there's a lot of, like, inadvertent, unintentional gaslighting from people in society who haven't had to be in those type of situations, where they were legitimately loved and accepted by someone, and they're like, well, because I grew up like that, I just assume, like, that's the trope, right? Your mom always loves you, your partner exactly. always loves you, your spouse always loves you, like, they parents always love their kids, and you're like, but sometimes they fucking don't. Okay. So yeah, that's I think very, very, very rarely discussed. I see you hanging out in there, Becker. Becker said, I can't tell you how amazing it is to hear someone tell their story like they're telling yours. Thank you. Validation is powerful. So yes, thank you. And then did you have go ahead.
So I think too, what I didn't add to that article, which I could have added now, is that as well, when you are coming from a situation where the parent that you have is in a marginalized community, it's even harder to, like, accept that they're a terrible person, or that, well, not even necessarily they're a terrible person, but that they're abusive or that they're doing something to hurt you. Like, you know, the fact that my mom was gay, you know, I didn't want to say anything bad about her parenting because that would be proving the bigots right. You know, I've been constantly watching, you know, shit all growing up all my life about how, you know, okay, people are, you know, like pedophiles and da 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 da. And like, you know, my mom has survived a lot of horrible shit and she's been abused a lot in her life. And like, I didn't want to say anything bad about her. As well, if you have a parent, I think it's even more difficult if you have a parent who has been through shit tons of abuse, mm-hmm. and you can't, you know, there's this whole sort of idea of like who has been through the worst, and like if you're like, oh, my mom's been through worse, I can't like call her on anything because how can I do that? So I think like that creates even more of a hard time for you to like really realize that your parent isn't the best, hasn't done the best of jobs, is that if they're already part of a marginalized community, you don't want to give anybody any weapons to attack them with.
And I've also find that people who are very intentionally abusive weaponize identities in that way for that reason. I know that's somebody we've talked about on the show. If you, for those who have been listening for a while, you know, we've talked about like Timothy Bradford, right?
Yes.
Right. He's a black, I guess, gender queer person assigned male at
that
birth.
That nigga might not even identify as black anymore. He's full of shit. Fuck that nigga.
But was essentially, you know, on the come up as a leader in the black community to fight against, you know, racism, but was using social justice rhetoric to coerce women into engaging in sex acts with him. And it's like, you know, that's something I see a lot, is because some people are very good at learning the rhetoric and then weaponizing their identity to abuse other people. You know, I've seen it in BDSM. I've seen it with people in poly situations. I've seen it in feminist groups. I've seen it in, you know, black spaces, Latino spaces, like LGBTQ spaces, where someone is like, I know all the words and I am marginalized and therefore you can never say anything to me, no matter how abusive I may or may not be to you, because identity politics.
And with Bradford, like, because that, you know, Timothy Bradford, a.k.a. Fadeaway, it's like that nigga's a rapist. And in particular, like, his thing is, he likes breaking conditional consent. Yeah. Just to make that fucking clear.
Yeah.
He's a fucking scumbag.
Yeah.
It's Lola Phoenix. I've been reading Lola Phoenix shit on the medium.com. You know, like sometimes, like before I came up here, I was in Florida. You know, and like, you get caught in a fucking lightning storm. And you're just like, and you go on the medium. And you're like, let me check out some shit. You know, you check out some shit. And then, like I said this at the beginning of the program before you came on, it's like, and then I just kept reading them. And I was just like, fuck, there's more. Then I go on the Facebooks and I'm like, does this nigga post on Facebook too? And then when I searched the name, I was like, this motherfucker's already on my friends list. Goddamn. So that shit's dope. And, so wait, are there any other platforms that you use?
Mostly I just use Medium in terms of blogs. But I think like I do have like Twitter and stuff like that. I used to read like all of my tweets, and now it's just like I don't have time to read them all. So I feel really bad. So I have this like kind of like sad relationship with Twitter where I'm like, I really like it, but I can't read everyone's things, and I kind of feel bad about it.
Twitter is a very fast-paced thing.
That's word. All right, we're going to wrap this one up. And I think it's good that we brought you on at this time, right? Because before I wanted to do it when it was just podcasts with telephone audio. Mm-hmm. Then I was like, oh, we got updated podcast audio. I want to do it then. Now it's the Facebook Live. It looks professional. Looks like some MSNBC shit, right? Got the fucking screen up there. At MSNBC, I changed what that stands for.
Oh.
That's not Microsoft Broadcasting anymore. That's mean smart niggas being crotchety. Okay, that's MSNBC over here.
You couldn't get the fucking granddad out of your system if you tried. Niggas being crotchety?
Yes.
Fucking
all right.
Old ass man.
All right, thank you for coming on. I know you couldn't see us because Phoenix Kalita has her Fourth Amendment protector over her laptop camera. but yeah, if you look at the if you go back and look at the Facebook Live archive, you can see it looks pretty crispy.
Yes.
All right. So thank you coming on. Remember,
thank
Lola
you.
Phoenix, yes, Phoenix Kalita, not the same person.
Same person.
All right.
Confusing.
All right, you have a good one there.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye. Bye.
Oh, that was fun.
All right, that was that shit, right?
That was that shit.
Yeah, and hopefully, like after doing that, maybe she'll check the archive. She'll be like, yo, I want to write some more shit. And write some more shit. And I'll be like, come back on and talk about that shit.
Come back on and talk about it.
And and I don't know if her laboring schedule is consistent, but if it is, then I guess Thursday would be the most expected day.
Yeah. Plus, it's a good for free thought.
Oh, fuck, it is Free Thought Thursday. This is like the most responsible Free Thought Thursday in a while.
It is. Yes.
Fucking like 2 or 3 months.
Yes.
That was a very responsible one.
It's good.
All right, fucking WineCellarMedia.com, Patreon.com/WineCellarMediaFund, PayPal.me/PhoenixAndWilliam. All right, and that'll be that, right?
Yes.
That's right. And you know the main reason.
I swear to you, fuck, I'm gonna... sometime when you're at work, I'm gonna delete that shit out of the soundboard.
You don't know how to work the sound.
I will ask Ricky!
Ricky?
Ricky!
I know why you'll ask Ricky.
He's got the biggest, juiciest fruits I've ever seen.
I'm gonna tell Michael Wright to come beat your ass.
Oh, man.
It's Free Thought Thursday in the wine cellar.
All right, and that'll be that. All right, good day to you, podcast heads, Facebook Live. Bye-bye.
Bye, y'all.